Hello, everyone. TJ Schwartz here. Welcome back to the Edge and Flow podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Lucas Burnley. You may notice my audio is not as good as it has been in the past. If you can remember the last episode by now, you would remember that I had a little better audio before. But I'm at the dining room table. We are recording middle of the week, which, well, yeah, middle-ish of the week, which we never do. Shops are loud. We're hiding off in our cubby and we're going to talk about life. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm psyched to be recording again. We have been we our time has been monopolized pretty effectively. We had started recording on Fridays at what, like 6 a.m. my
Six,
time,
seven, my time, yeah.
because that was like the window that you had before like machines fired up and employees were in, which was theoretically supposed to not be a shop day for you in general, but started to overtake. So yeah, man, we got a lot to catch up. Like, you and I have a lot to catch up on,
Yeah, agreed.
which I feel like is always fun to record. Where should we start?
Yeah, you have some new people.
Sure, man. Let's big changes all around. So, recap of year so far was that we bought an investment property with a shop, the goal being to rent the house and then utilize the shop for kind of this expansion that I was seeing coming. We added a new Haas mill to that shop. Throughout all of this, as to be expected, there was a bunch of delays and like setbacks and like miscommunications. That part is like, mill is on the ground with power. I have not turned it on. We have renters in the house. It is awesome. We've been able to use the apartment over the shop to like host family a couple times, and we've got friends coming to stay. So like, that's super sick. And then hired part-time help who has worked out like fantastically.
Great.
And basically, so I have him 2 days a week, 20 hours. So we're working two tens. And basically those are Kihoku days. So the days that he's in, we are just fully charging on the Kihoku. That is the application of the new shop, is basically going to be basically using the Kihoku as a format to get better at consistent output and production. Okay. And then this year I've also been doing this like crazy push around social media, basically like filming with someone and then having them like edit post. We are now on a trial basis with someone internal who, again, looks like they're going to be a really, really good fit for the team. Primary focus is kind of around the management of our social media, product photography, some content creation, but is also like a good with his hands, like car and motorcycle guy who just loves being in shops. And so yeah, man, we've doubled the size of our team. Now it's not Maddie and me, it's four of us, and we're just really kind of trying to like figure it out.
So my only question after hearing all that is, what are you doing with all the free time you have right now?
That part hasn't settled in yet.
Right.
What I will say though, in all honesty, what's been great is like I'm starting to see the light, like little pockets of light pop up, specifically with Isaiah in the shop as a shop assistant, is that he's picking up tasks really quickly and has ownership. So like, recently, we're still doing our Kydex like the old school way, like forming to the knife. Like I haven't moved it to a fixture yet, but Isaiah was able to handle the kydex process from start to finish on a batch of 30 knives, from sheet to assembly.
That's great. That's a big
Huge.
deal.
Yeah, he's really picking it up fast, and that does actually create free time. That allowed me to basically start to look at folders again and like start to go through the process and like make some minor improvements and start to run some parts. In this though, to your point, we had to make one major strategic decision, and that was to cancel Blade for this year. And it was hard. But I just was like sitting there at the end of the week last week, and I was looking at it, and I realized like this is one of those areas where like you look at a situation and you can go, okay, I can do anything, right? But I can't do everything. You cannot do everything. And at some point in the decision tree, something has priority. Blade for us has always been important. It's a great way for us to connect with our customers. It's like the time that we see other makers. I like see the companies that I work with. But we've been charging so hard this year that the decisions we've made, while they like will yield, I think, the ability to be more effective around shows, it doesn't mean that we're there yet. And I just looked at it and I was like, man, I don't want to let off the gas. I don't want to have to make all of my focus around just getting ready for the show. And I don't want to come back burnt out.
Dude, you've got an enormous amount on your plate. Machine, employees, new house that you acquired. You got kids, you were telling me you have a kid's birthday coming up, a big one. Yeah, man, you can't beat yourself up. I went through the same feeling with dropping out of Blade Show this year, and yeah, it's just eventually you gotta make the call. And
It's like
I get
something
it.
has to
So
give.
yeah.
And it's this, I don't know if you do this too, but like basically, until I really, really started to sit down and like weigh the pros and cons, I didn't take like I almost don't let the addition of obligation or like setbacks enter the conversation. So like all that's happening is I'm feeling really, really bad that I'm not where I need to be in Blade production without being like, well, okay, yeah, but we did this and we like this process took longer, or we've like hired and trained employees, and I'm like, why am I behind? This is ridiculous. I'm such a slacker. And I just had to look and like almost basically just make like a list. And I was like, okay, I've actually done, like I look at it and I'm like, I've done enough for like this first half of the year. And that kind of was the takeaway, is that like you and I have talked about this quite a bit, which is like you can't exist in a growth phase 100% of the time. The first half of this year has been like insane growth. Like in not, again, man, like around like the property, that was a 5-year goal that I put together inside of a year. And it was an opportunity that popped up and it worked, but it wasn't the right timing. Like I wasn't like flush with cash to like buy a property. Like I made m Madden, I made it work. It's separate though, in the way where it's like when we have these goals that we're trying to achieve around like our work, it's so easy to just focus on those, even as like you're doing things around them. I don't know. Like, do you find that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the growth question, I keep bringing it up. I think I've mentioned it on other podcasts that we've done, but it's the amount of throttle that you are willing to give to the business is consequential on pretty much all other sides of life.
Yes.
And sometimes the business, it almost asks for the throttle. It's like you didn't even make that decision. It just sort of, it's just the way the lay of the land was. You just hit the gas, and it just it almost seems dumb not to sometimes. And so you have to like come around to almost resisting the way the world's pushing you in that way, to conserve, you know, that little that energy and that ability to have peace, like in your personal life or with family or other things like that. And so, yeah, I'm coming to the similar conclusions that, you know, the business, I have to decide how fast I want it to grow. It's not just running wild on its own and I have to keep up. That's not a good idea. You know what
That's
I
not,
mean?
that's letting the business
Yeah.
run you. Well, it's almost like to use your throttle analogy, it's like having self-generating horsepower. So it's like you start to put your foot down, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's a little more. Like I do actually want to feel this go faster. You know, you're not in the Ford Festiva. You
That
know,
turbo lag
yeah,
slows for a second, then all of a sudden the turbo
it's
catches
just
and you just
like,
want to stomp on it.
man,
Yeah, it's
it
just.
really is. So that basically, right now, over the past few days, I've kind of, I think I was running on adrenaline because I've been running 7 days a week for the majority of the year. My sleep schedule has been crazy. For the majority of that time, I was doing like pretty good around like self-care. The last month, like my fitness process has kind of like dipped, or I'm missing gym days. I'm like missing surfing. Like I'm just noticing, like I'm making judgments that are based around the work and not around my life. And so I'm kind of trying to come at, let like the decision around Blade kind of come to a natural stop. But the goal from this point forward is now like not to focus on any type of like growth or new, exciting, fun project, but to stabilize all of the things that we've built. Now I just want to stabilize from the growth and like get that running smooth.
Yeah, tie up all the loose ends.
Yeah, tie up loose ends. And like I'm really bad about that because I get excited about projects, or I get excited about, like, I don't know, the exciting work. But a lot of times what that means is that I leave things like half or three quarter, 80% done. You know, not like from a completion standpoint of a product, but like it would, you know, I might not finish a landscaping project before I move on to like building something out of metal because that's more fun. And I'm like, well, it's like working. So I'm trying to look at this and just be like, okay, take a, you know, overview of what we've kind of like put into place, and then just let that be enough. Learn. I mean, the show thing is really a tricky one because the way that I did shows for years isn't viable now. But I'm still learning that, you know, and it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of years of muscle memory of kind of like creative fervor and like getting ready for a show inside of a month or month and a half. And now it's like the cost downstream is just too high and the risk is too high. And, you know, I can't take time off after a show. I've got to get back in, and we've got employees now. And it's like, so the way that I think that process has to happen, that's like where I'm going to put the work in that I would have put into Blade, is basically like, okay, what's the next thing we have? How can I not be in this position? how can I make the most out of that and be excited about it and like, you know. Yeah. So.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I will miss Atlanta this year. I'm sure you will, but for anyone out there listening, we'll be back.
Yeah, this
We'll be
is
back.
long term, like shows. I've always thought that shows you should actually vary them. Okay. Blade's a hard one, you know. And again, I think this is, I don't know if newer makers are view it in the same way, but like for a long time, it's like Blade has been like, if you're gonna do one show, you go to Blade, right? Because it's the industry show. And this is if you want to be, you know, if you want to do collaboration, if you want to do production, if you want to learn a bunch of stuff, like if you want to network, like that's the level of show. Otherwise, there's a lot of small shows that, you know, can drive to and provide a show experience. But this was Blade was like, if you're a hustler, you're going to Blade.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, man, I don't know. We'll see. Everything in its season, like right now, like you mentioned the kid thing, like a show going right into the beginning of summer. If you're not dialed, like it's hard. Like we're getting, that means I've got, you know, two kids' birthdays, which, you know, I want to be able to focus on. We've got like school events. And then we drop right into summer, and like, there's it's hard to utilize all the resources for a show. So, the one thing I will say that in the past, like I've canceled shows just out of kind of being reactive, and just real like basically 20 plus years of doing shows, I think I've canceled somewhere around like four or five. And I want to say all of those have been since 2020. Cause like I canceled the show in the pandemic. Like there was just times where we were moving and, but all of this stuff coincides with like moves, kids, you know, changes. And so I just have to look and be like, well, yeah, that's, this is not a by choice thing. But the upside here was that I've started realizing the kind of the downstream cost of shows from a stress standpoint. And so I put a pretty hard deadline on this one. I worked past my deadline that I had set for myself, but I started to feel it and I caught it. And I was really proud of myself for being like, I made a deadline. I didn't achieve my goal. I'm now fighting a weak position. Now I need to really look at this, why I'm making this choice. So, yeah, slow learning, but learning.
It's part of it.
It's part of it, man.
One of the things on your plate that we could dive into too is you have a guy come out to help you with the Haas on that same week. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that again, man, like it just everything stacked. So yeah, Haas is sending out a tech to do like a day of training with me. I think I like went back and forth on it, and at the end I was like, nope, I want help. It's a brand new machine. It's a new generation control. I'm not a machinist. I've never used a probe. Like I just saw, I'm like, if I can get someone to come and like hold my hand through a few things, I feel good about that. And that was actually one of the things like that was a setback, was that was supposed to happen with the install of the machine. The install got delayed. Delivery got delayed, install got delayed, and then when they were doing the install, there were delays because like they got like a faulty fuse. But basically it took the tech couldn't fix it, and then they had someone new in the office over they o they were supposed to overnight the tech apart, and I get a phone call the next day asking why I haven't paid for the part, and they're like, we were going to send it, but you haven't called in and paid the invoice. And I was like, your tech ordered the part and he's in a hotel right now, so you might want to talk to him.
Yeah, whoa.
So basically that blew his schedule, delayed another week. He came back, set it up, but it's just like you can't. There's a point where like I can't change that. Like I, you know. So, yeah, basically, Hostech is coming the day that I would have been flying home from Atlanta. So.
I think you made the right call, man.
Think
Yeah, that's
so.
one thing I've noticed about manufacturing is you can't be in manufacturing without a vendor network. We do a few things with like heat treat and obviously steel supply and stuff, but you can bring as much as you want in house, but someone's still got to make the steel, someone's got to make the raw materials, someone's got to do make your machinery or whatever. And so it's amazing how the more complex your operation gets and the more the vendor network gets involved, you learn the value of a really good vendor. You learn the value of setting yourself up to not be overly dependent on vendors sometimes, or have a diversification of vendors. And yeah, dealing with vendors is way bigger a part of my job these days than what I would have guessed. It's super interesting.
Well, that's just the idea that like scale is not one dimensional. There's no way, I mean, maybe sometimes, but essentially, if you scale one process, it scales things around it and not necessarily the obvious ones. Like you might just spend more time talking to vendors.
You're right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we had an interesting this was an interesting week with vendors the last 2 weeks, I guess. We had ordered material from a vendor, upstanding vendor, no complaints about them. Waiting on the invoice, waiting on the material, blah blah blah. And I get a charge on my card in the amount that I would expect probably that order is going to be. So I don't really think too much about it. 2 weeks go by and I get an invoice from the vendor saying, "Hey, you never paid for that material." And I'm like, "Well, there's a charge matching the amount exactly, like to the penny. We're talking large, like 3 grand." Well, turns out it was fraud. And it's not even a bank that this vendor uses. And yeah, but it matches the amount on an invoice that I didn't yet have when the transaction occurred. So I had to go through a bunch of loops with my bank, with the vendor, with this, with that. So it's still an open investigation, but I had to, deactivate the card, do all this. So, and then only shortly after I get a contact for my heat treater that we have possibly a steel mix up. So we have some knives that were heat treated that appear to not be the steel we thought it was. So both of those happened in short
Whoa.
succession. So it's stuff like that that I don't know what the fraud situation was. I don't blame them for that, but perhaps something was stolen on their end, my information or something. And then the steel, still don't know on that, but this is pretty normal, I've come to realize. I mean, those two are unique situations, but it's always a unique situation. You know what I mean? It's
No,
you're
there's
kind of,
literally always a problem.
your business is kind of married to a bunch of partners that you don't have control over. You know what I mean? So it's like you always have that, their problems become your problems and vice versa. That's just sort of the way it works. So,
I'm usually grateful when a problem arises in a new relationship because for me, like, people will like, oh, I'm so sorry this happened, or like, this isn't like normal. It's like, no. Like, problems are given. How you fix them, that makes them unique, I think, right? Or like
that's accurate,
that is what makes a good vendor partner. Like, okay, we had a problem. How do we solve it? Like, because if you can't make it past that, then there's no value, you know? Yeah, it's that's there's definitely a little bit of that for me going on right now, just from like a volume standpoint. I'm amazed. Like we just went through our Kydex order and I was like, oh, like last me like a year. Like, like, and all of a sudden it's like, oh man, I gotta like redo it. Like I'm finally starting to do Kanban out of necessity. not out of because I think it's a cool idea, because I actually am seeing now, like, oh, we need this, or we're gonna run out of parts.
Yeah, I honestly think if we weren't running the Kanban system, I could see our business being like 50% smaller because of it. I mean, it's so important to us that I honestly think we would be overnighting stuff almost every day, because we created a spreadsheet that contains like the links to all the Kanbans. Because there was a time I didn't know how many Kanbans we had, because somebody would fire a Kanban, submit it to me, I'd order it, put it back. So I never could see all the Kanbans we
Overall,
created.
yeah.
Yeah. So I started making a spreadsheet to clean it up. And it's like we probably have 100 Kanbans in the shop or close to it. And it's stuff, it's like a sandblast cabinet. Sometimes the glove gets holes in it. We have a Kanban for that glove so that we don't end up without a sandblaster and have to overnight a glove. So it's stuff like that. And the amount of Kanbans that I order, if we didn't have the Kanban, those would all be under duress or a large percentage. And I couldn't imagine not having it, honestly. I don't even, the fact that some people do it without it and they scale a business without it, I would love to see how they're doing it, because I don't see, it doesn't seem possible, but obviously it is.
Doesn't seem possible. Yeah. And I'm moving, like, I am not organized. My brain is not organized in that way. I've never made a spreadsheet. I'm starting to, like, realize again, like, just this is evolution. Like, there's things that I need to learn if I want to move forward. So, yeah, the Kanban system is, like, right now for us, is it's like same prototype system, but I've got parts that I need, goes in there. We're kind of adapting. I'm learning, like, what the numbers are. I'm learning how to use it, you know, and we're still in this hybrid model where, like, part of it is this, like, just full custom shop where I can, like, go over to some, you know, random drawer and grab some Damascus and make a custom. But I'm also have, you know, 1,000 of some standoff now. And I'm trying to figure out how to, that I can't interact with those two things the same way right now. Because I'm so used to being flexible. Like, in the past, there's almost no delay of a vendor or, like, a machine going down that would stop us or me at that point, right? Because I could just do something different. And I'm kind of, like, looking at the new system, and I like that ability to flex. And I think there's always some, I will always try to maintain some element of that. But I also realize that, like, okay, that you have to build, like, redundancy around, like, the functional productive systems. It can't all be problem solving. Like,
Yeah, exactly. And things like, hardware, screws, barrels, sharpening belts for your sand belt grinder. It's like there is no creativity there. Not kanbaning it is, it doesn't really gain you anything on like the product side. Where I am careful about with the kanbans is like, if you're starting to kanban things that when it's kanban, you're just going to depend on it and you're not going to be creative after that. One example is like, let's say Cerakote paint or like handle material. If you Kanban it, you're just going to have a likelihood of going on autopilot, and they could release a new color and you just wouldn't even notice because you never pay attention. You just trust the Kanban.
Great, great,
So
great example.
it can make you go stale if you've Kanban things that are what directly impact the creativity side. And so you got to be a little careful, and that's with our weekly drops. We don't Kanban that stuff for a reason. As soon as you Kanban it, then you're relying on it and you're in a rut. So we Kanban everything that's in our configurator, standard order stuff. And then every week we're just doing something random. And some of it we use a lot of, and you would think, oh, for efficiency's sake, I should Kanban that. But I've decided not to, just so that we don't have, yeah, it's more problem solving, but the Kanban can trap you in a way. So
I love that. Well, and that's efficiency in general, where, like, I keep telling myself, like, let the efficient things be efficient. But, like, my goal is not, I don't need to make everything efficient. I just don't, you know? And with Kanban, I mean, around that, you can even look there and be like, well, okay, we know we like to have X amount of handle material that's wild card, but that itself, you can can Kanban that. You'd be like, we need 50 sets of scales, but I'm not going to specify what that material is. But when you're out of it, you still need to order it, you know? And there's things like that, I think, where I'm finding where I'm like, okay, the creativity can stay there or the flexibility, but I do have to have some solution, right? So yeah, it's I don't know, man. It's fun. I'm very excited right now to we're still like riding this middle line of fit constantly figuring things out based on the way that I was doing, and then slowly little areas of efficiency. I'm starting to see it, and I'm seeing space around it. And right now I'm very excited to kind of just dig into that and just make the next round of improvements. Like, you know, like we're talking about Kydex, and that's a great example of something where it's like it would be so easy for me to just keep doing it exactly the way we're doing it. And with like a big show looming, I'm not gonna make the changes during that. I'm gonna count that I'm gonna have time to do it after. Whereas now I can look at it and I can just say, like, okay, this now becomes a scheduled task. I'm gonna spend, you know, next week or whatever, like making the improvement. And that feels really good. Because it feels like time. That feels like being able to choose how I'm scaling or how I'm focusing. So,
Well, it's
dude,
a lots of problems to solve.
what a year, man. I mean, it's a, well, we're 5 months in.
I took a personality test this last week because I kind of have fun doing that kind of stuff, and there was something about it. I couldn't quote it, but it said something about you enjoy problem solving. And I was like, yeah, I do, but thank God I do, man, because if
Oh.
I didn't, this would be interesting. But I do like it. I do like solving problems. Sometimes you get like the just too many at once, but
Right.
and it's
Do you get
better than
decision fatigue? Like, do
yes.
you get, if
That's
you
my like
get, yeah, like
that's my
not
biggest
being,
problem.
does it incapacitate you, or can you get like deer in the headlights when you're like, okay, I know I need to work on this, I need to work on this, I want to work on that, and then end up doing nothing? Or are you always able to pick a path?
I'll have to think about that a little bit. I feel like I'm able to push through it pretty well. I think where it affects me is just in my like overall, I don't know, mood. You know what I mean? It's like I like solving problems, but then eventually when the hopper gets too full of problems to solve, like my mood is impacted because it feels endless. You know what I mean? So there's a little bit of that. Seems like, yeah, I feel pretty good about being able to jump on it and just start solving them. But yeah, there's some of them. The ones that get me are the ones where it's like I have a theoretical problem, or a theoretical solution to a problem, but it's the time horizon's really long and I can't actually make it happen fast.
Too
And
nebulous.
so yeah, you're kind of like in a hurry up and wait. Those are frustrating. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad that it's something I like doing, solving problems, because that's what business is at the end of the day. So it's working.
You just want to be solving the right problems. The time horizon thing is, I think, for me, very relevant. And again, like with ADHD, I can focus, I can get tasks done, but if a problem is like too open-ended, I find a lot of ways to not do it. And so I think, I think that's why I've done shows the way I've done them for so long, is because at a point the show becomes the most important problem to solve, and like hyper-focus kicks in and I get it done
With a hard deadline too.
with a hard deadline. But up until that point, it's nebulous. I know I need to get ready for the show, but I don't have, it's not like a, then there's a hard deadline, but the deadline is far enough away that it's not an immediate threat. And so I'm kind of trying to learn to break things down just into like where there's some accountability. And to be honest, I don't know. I know that I need the stress around a show. if I want to really do good creative work, at least that's what it feels like. But I feel like there's maybe a way to kind of can some of that, like put in some false deadlines. I don't know. I don't know if my brain will like accept that as an, that's like gonna know, like that's not a real deadline.
What you need to do is call Blade Show staff and have them send you an email with false deadlines
Yeah,
and
dude.
not send you the emails with the actual deadlines.
Yeah, like it, we have to like, I don't know, man. I feel like I have to trick my brain into some. I've been doing it since I was a kid. Like I did it around saving. Like one of the first things I did, I remember, was like, I wouldn't spend anything under a $5 bill. So basically, to buy anything, I had to spend $5. But then now I couldn't spend what I had under that, so I would save it.
That's
It's
interesting.
always been hacks like that to like get things done. And now I understand why, but at that point I didn't. So, what else do we spend a lot of time talking about what I got going on? What's going on in the shop? You just dropped a new model extension, right?
Yes, correct.
Give us a
The
little
model,
background on it.
the Overland X
Okay.
is our newest model. It falls squarely between the classic original Overland and the Overland Sport. And the reason for that idea is that the Overland is like a clear-cut belt knife. You're not going
Yep.
to in pocket the Overland. I mean, I've seen someone do it, but it's almost
Sure.
like kind of to be funny. You wouldn't
Right.
really typically do that. And then the Overland Sport is clearly a po in pocket fixed blade.
Right.
It's 90% of people, that's how they're carrying it. But it is small. It's very small. It's like a 2.7 inch blade, 6.5 inches overall. And it didn't feel that small because I was so used to it. But then I made the Overland X, and now the Overland Sport feels like a mini knife. Which is kind of the goal because it really is a mini knife. And so the Overland X is in pocket available. So it's like we made sure that we weren't going to oversize it to where you couldn't in
Right.
pocket it. Because that's kind of a hard cutoff for a lot of people that buy knives. And so I've carried it in pocket and it's really comfortable in pocket, but it's pushing towards the upper limit of in pocket so that you could have a lot of guys have said that they have big hands and the Overland Sport. They either bought one and it was just a little bit too small for the big-handed types, or they just told me, like, hey, when you make a little bit bigger one, I'll buy it. But I can already tell I like a little bit bigger handle. So the Overland X is that. And we launched it 2 weeks ago as a configurator. We did limited quantities. So basically, we're trying to ramp up into production without sinking ourselves or overcommitting. So we just did a brief period through the mailing list of sales to get custom orders in. We are shipping those this week, by and large, it looks like. And that those orders came in last week. Yesterday, we did our second offering to bring in the next group of custom orders so that we could start on those this week. Ship next week, ideally. So we're going to kind of keep doing that leapfrog for a little bit and just make sure that we're not going to get caught with some issue that
Yeah.
we weren't prepared for. So like sheath fitment and all these, we spent a lot of time dialing it in, but I have learned that doing 1, 3, 4, 5 of any one thing is just not that much data. And
Yeah.
it's not until you do it week in and week out that you find the boundaries of some of the tolerances. You find that, oh, this sheath worked when we made it last week, but if the scales are a little bit thinner on the thinner side of the tolerance, like it feels a little different. And you kind of have to just move through that without being buried. At least
Just
that's my plan.
repetitions,
Yeah. Get the
man. I
reps
mean,
in
it
at a
is.
little bit lower quantities without promising too much. And because we could always, open it wide open, and then if it gets to be a larger number, we could just extend the lead time.
Yeah.
That's just a slippery slope.
Yeah, but you
So,
don't know the pro. That's the thing. You don't know the
yeah.
problems. Well, and I saw you developed. I was watching you work through the sheath, the new mold, dude. And like, I mean, that's genius. And that's the right kind of problem solving. And I would imagine for you, that's like engaging problem solving. Like you're psyched to be doing that, you
Yeah,
know?
definitely.
And I think that is externally, like you'll see people wonder, like, oh, like why are you doing the same model? Or why are you continuing this? I as a maker, I think that sometimes with like a known format, that's where you're able to really make huge strides in like your understanding or your process, because now you're able to focus on like this one element. When I saw you working on the sheath mold, that was like, I saw two things. One, you're messing with a bunch of different textures for the scales. Okay. That goes downstream from this model forward, because now you're like, oh, okay, we have all these new textures on lock. But also, you have the new sheath, like mold, process that also goes downstream. And it's like, that's a huge amount of development. But you utilized kind of a known format to achieve it. I really like that.
Well, thanks. We love doing our weekly drops. It's become a really core part of our business over the last 6 or 8 months. And so with the Overland Sport and the Overland, our weekly drops, we are mainly doing different finishes and materials, but not we aren't very free to play with the scales in like 3D ways, like you mentioned, either texture or maybe there's an extra thick version of the scale or an extra thin version of the scale or like a super slim whatever. And it's because of the sheath molding. It's to your point, we had those other models set up as kind of like permanently sheath molding off of this one shape. And I wanted to unlock that potential for the weekly drops of this knife to where we could just kind of reconfigure and have a modular sheath mold that would accept weird handles of unknown. I mean, I can't even right now picture what they would be, but I just wanted to have it ready. And so that's what we plan to do is on the weekly drops with that knife, eventually we could have some unique texture on a unique material, on a unique Cerakote color, whatever. And it's just kind of an exponential increase in the variability that can happen with that. And so we launched it with like a pretty broad, aggressive texture. And it's a little bit more of a, maybe some people wouldn't like that much texture, but I wanted to come out pretty strong and heavy with the texture to kind of illustrate the differences with that knife, that this is going to be more of a texture playground. And so what we could go back and do a smooth version that's a lot more like the sport, but we could go all different directions. So that's it's
I
ready for
think
that.
long game to me, that I think that's survival. And again, if we look at knives and you just think, okay, someone is buying a knife as a tool, they need it, and that's the one that they're gonna buy, like you're shooting yourself in the foot. Like we know that the market is like passion driven. And so like colors, sizes, textures, materials, like those are all things that are interesting to people. If you give people options, like you extend that ability, so I think I'm like super happy to see you doing that. I keep trying to like when I look at what I'm doing now, I'm like, okay, what is it that I love about making like one-off customs? And then how do I integrate some of that into like a more production-minded process? And I think I see areas where it's just there are constant areas that allow for creativity, even in an efficient kind of production environment. It's pretty sweet.
That is kind of the trickiest part of building out manufacturing is if you want to just make the one knife exactly the same, no changes, that's you have a very small number of variables doing it that way, and you can control it. You can have, more cost effectiveness and all that. And that's one way to go. It's kind of the Henry Ford quote, like you can have any color you want as long as it's black. And but designing the process to be nearly that efficient, but also have these w flexibility points that you've decided, on ours, different materials, that's not that big a deal. But to have the different textures available, that's not something we've really had. So it's the process of the product. It's designing this process so that this family of the Overland X is going to be wider than before. So
Dude, well, and that's this is like the choose your own adventure component of this, and where preconceived notions, I think, start to fall short, right? Is we have ideas around manufacturing or what production means, and it's based on what you see other people do, right? Again, to reference, Chris Reeve, like, and the way that they work, like, they allow for variations that they can do in small amounts, and like they're efficient, but they will still do things that feel just incredibly custom. And to me, that is, I'm like, oh, that's what I want. That's the way. That is much more interesting than the Ford model, you know? And like right now, I'm reading which one, Taichi Ocho or one of the like Toyota production. And you realize like the difference between the way that Toyota worked and the way that Ford worked, right? And I think that for us, that like Toyota method is much closer, right? That desire to be able to like change midstream, like make something cool, make something different, bring in a prototype, but still have that be efficient, really, really ties in. And that's, I mean, as a like what I would consider like I still think of myself as a custom knife maker. I think that is like the fear point of like, but I don't want to make only one thing and have that dictate, like, have the process dictate, like, what it is. And I'm realizing, like, you don't actually have to. That you do get to pick that, you know?
It requires a lot of thought and kind of anticipation of what you might want to do and where to add the flexibility points. It's like it's sort of you make a knife or a design or whatever it is with a set of sliders on it, and you're like, I know if there's enough sliders that that will give me enough creative ability down the road that I'm gonna have fun with this, you know? And so it's like you just want to put more sliders. It's just like a video game, you know, the character creation. The more sliders, the more possibilities. Like design those in at some point.
Ooh, that's a really good analogy. I gotta sit with that one just because it is that from a design standpoint is a really powerful tool when looking at the potentiality of a product. You're like, what do I want to be able to do with it? And I think for me, a lot of times that's been organic in like if we use a SiPop as an example, right? It's like the SiPop was one shape and I made it for a while, and then I was like, oh, I can like change the front of that, but everything else stays the same. Okay. And then it's like from there, you start to see like another level where you can change, like, oh, I can change the thickness, or I can change. Now we've changed the size, you know, multiple. Now we have a big one and a small one, and we have ones that are multiple pieces, you know, but it wasn't by design. And so I think at this point, you could look at almost anything and be like, where is the value to be able to change? Like, this is a funny one. I love. When I design folders, I like to design them to fit multiple blade shapes. Okay.
A good example.
What is crazy to me is that very rarely, when those knives are collaboration knives, do the other blade shapes ever get used. And I think it's because there's a thought that they will cannibalize something that is already working well. So I don't know if that's like a viable one, but in my mind, that would be an example of that lever. Like, oh, if you have a certain, the Quicken basically fits the Quicken blade. Okay. The Keyhan fits like six different blade shapes. And that was actually by design. So if you run that filter through like a fixed blade, it starts to be like pretty fun.
One thing I'm jealous about when it comes to folders is folders are a lot easier to make, or folders are a lot harder to make, but they have one huge liberty, which is that they don't have sheaths. And so
Dude.
that is one thing about the Kydex is, man, is I'd love to have that kind of mentality where one of the sliders that I have is on the blade shape. But if you're moving a slider and you're redesigning sheath systems for that, oh man, like that's one I haven't cracked that code of how you would do that to where your fixtures and your sheath making could adapt. Whereas a folder, as long as the edge is concealed, you know what I mean? It doesn't really care.
You know
Which
what's interesting? When I saw what you were doing with sheaths, I saw like, okay, you could like looking at the turn, it's like you could go skeletonized to scaled on that fixture, because you could essentially have like your skeletonized version, and then you add your scale component. Now you can make touches off of that mold within a range of blade shapes, tip shape, something like that. There's probably you could probably do the same thing with a modular blade element. Obviously there's like a window no matter what, but man, it start you just this stuff is all iterative. It's like the more you learn, the more it's the horsepower equation, right? Like it's like, oh, you've got more horsepower, like, oh, here's more. It's really pretty fun. I don't know, that the ability to make weird one-off stuff is super enticing to me still. You know who does actually, I think, does a pretty good job of this as like a bigger production company is Microtech. I feel like that is because like Tony wants to make something. Emerson too, right? Like Emerson is building customs based off of probably parts that are coming out of the production line, taking those and then building customs. I saved a few Kihokus back to hand grind because I want to do a few, like I want to do some daggers because it's sick. Like, man, I just want to do big old deep hollow grinds on them. You know, eventually will I be able to cup wheel grind that? Like, yeah, probably. Can't do it today, but in my brain, I'm like, ooh, same thing with the handle textures. That like the handle textures is one that I'm stuck on right now because I see a bunch of variations, and I'm like, well, right now, not the time to change it. Like, I'm not there yet, you know?
It's a fun way to look at it. Set up efficiency that allows for the playground activities as well. And yeah, now I've got my gears turned and thinking about blade shapes and what would have to be. You'd almost have to have interchangeability on those fixtures, sort of like what the scales are, but you'd have to have some forgiveness built into the fixtures that would allow you like a certain envelope. Like if you can design a new blade, as long as it's in this range, it's no wider than this or longer than this or something like that. And you could sort of think ahead and I just like kind of learned this from you, line extensions and the growth of a product when it comes to, 5 years from now, we could be making an Overland X that's different than the one now. And it's still an Overland X, and all throughout could be this gradient of just changing things and making them interesting. And that on the sport has worked really well so far. And it's mostly been materials and colors, though. So taking it to the next level is very exciting.
Man, it really is. And that has always intrigued me because I'll notice that I have certain things that like a product where it's sticky to me. I don't get tired of it. I don't get tired of making it or thinking about it. And I would say the common thread is probably that ability to evolve it. But inside of like a recognizable kind of, format. I think too, there's a huge amount of value in that. Is there value in like short runs or like doing something wild? Like, yeah, absolutely. Not the type of value that I want. Like I'm as a custom maker, even early on, I didn't work that way because if I liked something enough to make it, I probably wanted to make it again. Right? Maybe tweaked a little bit. But like I've always had like the standard models and then variations on those models. And I think that's it's fun. The goal right now is we're close. So as soon as the second machine is up and running, I think what my plan is going to be. So right now we've got one machine in shop A, one machine in shop B. Basically, as soon as the machine in shop B is running, shop A machine is going to go there too, because I think it makes sense to have both the current machines in the same place.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, right. And just, I mean, I will probably at some point need a third machine in the, like, I don't know, development. We don't know, like R&D lab side of the
The skunk
business.
works, yeah.
Yeah, Skunk Works or Squirrel Works in my case. But that's kind of the thought. And then as I'm getting back into folders, I think the plan is I can't afford the time to take to get the folders right now, like as efficient as the Kihoku. And I don't think it warrants it. Again, going to that 80% thought, it would be really easy to be like, okay, I know how to make these changes. I'm gonna stop doing it on the Kihoku and move to folders. I don't want to. So I'm basically like, it's weird game of leapfrog where you get something efficient and then something else is inefficient. But now is not the time to fix that other thing. You have to like refine the first job. I don't know. I really like watching the way that you guys have worked and the way that you've started your shop is like there's an element of me where I'm like, I wish that I could do that and I can't, right? But there's so much that I can learn from it and kind of just see like, okay, I have to compartmentalize because I can't bring everything over all at once. But it is really it's fun, man, like working with Isaiah and seeing him get psyched about like ownership of a process and being like, okay, I know how to do that. Like I can start this start to finish. And like the satisfaction that comes from going from raw material to a finished part is so cool. That starting to streamline that has felt so good.
I bet.
Less of a wild card.
And also looking at it through, you're kind of relearning it through his eyes in a way, is what I've noticed, is like you question the decisions you've made about how you do things more readily when you're teaching it to someone else, because you try to explain why you're doing X, Y, and Z, and you can't explain it, and you would have just assumed that's fine until you had to explain it to someone else, and then you realize, well, that actually doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? So it helps refine the way you look at those things as well.
Yeah, I would say that like learning, like teaching is the best way to learn. Like you will 100% get better at anything you do by teaching somebody else to do the same thing. It just makes you look at your process. I think a lot of times now when I'm teaching things that are like more like soft skills, right? I really have to look at it 'cause just like years and years of muscle memory and like just the way that I've done something and then looking at it and being like, this literally makes no sense to teach someone to do it this way. Like, what am I? So does that mean it makes sense for me ever? Or like, yeah, that's a funny process, man. But yeah. What else? Anything, are we got anything else? That feels like a pretty good I feel like that's like a pretty good recap, catch up. We did our annual turkey hunting trip. We got skunked.
We did hear turkeys, we did see turkeys, we did drink wild turkey. So
Yeah,
I
and
don't know if that,
meanwhile, HMC Machine Works, if you follow Jim, he was rich with the turkey bounty. Putting his kids on turkeys, his friends on turkeys, taking turkeys with bows. So congratulations, Jim.
So we need to figure out what his guide fee is and
Yeah.
start saving up, huh?
I know. This starts to be the reason like people do collaborations. You're like, oh yeah, collaborate would be great. What's opening? Oh, finish it opening day. Like
Let's sweeten the deal up a little bit.
sweeten the deal. Yeah, man. Okay, so basically we are on a theoretically new schedule. We're trying something new. You have some time availability that you didn't before. So hopefully we will be able to start recording and having these conversations again.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out the system that would work for us recording with my shop being so loud. The system is I need to just come home and record, which is what I'm doing right now, but I need to have a more permanent setup over here, or more just ready to go setup, better audio quality and stuff, which once that dawned on me, I was like, yeah, that's why we haven't been recording. I've just been trying to force it into the shop and I can't get it to work. So, yeah.
Cool. We'll figure it out. Guys, thanks for listening. As always, we appreciate you. Drop us an email or comment and let us know if there's anything you want us to chop up.
You bet. Thank you guys. Peace.
All right, man. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, later.